So we left off last week, we were talking about some of the halachas concerning shechita, of course, shechita being the first step in terms of making sure that of course, all the food, all the meat is kosher. So in addition to all the dinim deraisa, the halacha of Moshe Sinai, and certain chumas derabanan that was instituted in halacha shechita, we find for some strange reason a whole array of different practices in halacha shechita that we're not exactly sure even where they come from, where exactly the source of some of these chumras and hagim that exist in halacha shechita. And many of them have a little bit of a dubious source in a sefer that we're not even sure what the name of the sefer was. Or at least the Rishonim weren't even sure what the name of the sefer was. It actually appears in the very, very first Tosus in Masechet Chulin, Beis Amud Aleph. Tosus makes reference to a sefer called Hilchos Aleph Yud, to give the Rosh Tevis for Aleph Yud. So for years it was always assumed that it was Aleph Yud usually stands for Eretz Yisrael. So there must have been the sefer that was floating around the days of the Rishonim called Hilchos Eretz Yisrael. It had a whole array of different Rehagim about the Hilchos Shechita. Then they realized afterwards that the Aleph Yud didn't even stand for Eretz Yisrael. The other Rishonim quote, the Aleph Yud stood for Amma Yehoshua. Who in the world was Yehoshua? So Yehoshua Ben Nun wrote a sefer about Hilchos Shechita. Well, depends who you ask. So there was a sefer floating around the days of the Rishonim that was authored by a man by the name of Eldad Hadani, who was also a very fascinating, very mysterious character. It was floating around different Jewish communities in the days of the Baal HaTosfos, before the Baal HaTosfos. And he claimed, as his name sounds, that he was a descendant of Shevet Dan. He claimed he was from the Aseret HaShvatim. And he had a whole series of different traditions that he claimed, different customs that he claimed, that he had Masaira that go all the way back to Yehoshua ben Nun. So the Sefer begins with Amar Yehoshua Moshe Piyak Gvura. The problem with the Sefer is that he quotes a lot of things in there that are definitely not Masaira's going back to Moshe ben Nun, to Yehoshua ben Nun, to anybody else for that matter. He said some of the Masaira's in there are very, very strange. So, for example, one of the things that he writes is that if a person shechts without reciting a bracha, so the shechita is nevela. So the post can point out, what do you mean shechita nevela? How can you say such a thing? He said the whole institution of Hilchos Brachas was only a din midrava. I'm Yeshua Moshe Piagura. All the brachas was instituted by the Anshei Knesset Gedola. The institution of reciting a bracha is not a dirabanan. The Gemara says that making a bracha on a mitzvah does not invalidate the mitzvah, does disqualify the mitzvah. It's not ma'akeh b'diyev. And therefore, to say that the shechita is an avela, because the shechita didn't make a bracha, sounds a little bit far-fetched. So to say that you should make a bracha, to try to encourage people to make a bracha, it was like a musa shmuz. Like, sometimes the rabbi gets up. I don't want to dispel anything that I say. You shouldn't take things I say seriously. But sometimes the rabbi gets up and gives us, sometimes you go overboard a little bit. So let's say that a person who doesn't make a bracha, the shechita is nevela, it's a little bit overboard. So that's not really what the halacha is. Then he has another comment, probably the most famous of all his comments are, Tosfos quotes in the Beis Amud Aleph, the beginning of Chulin is that women are not allowed to shecht. Noshmal yishchitu. Why are women not allowed to shecht? We have no idea exactly why women are not allowed to shecht. Not only do we have no idea why, but the Mishnah Maseches Vachim records that even for shechita is kodshim, women are permitted to shecht. Because the din is that shechita is not considered to be an avoda. All the other parts of the avodas adam, the receiving the blood and the walking the blood to the mizbech and the sprinkling the blood in the mizbech, those are all labeled as avodos, and those have to be done only by a male descendant of Aaron HaKohen. Anyone else who chooses to do one of those avodos will be in violation of very serious avera and will also disqualify the entire korban. But shechita, the din is that shechita k'sher bazar. The shechitas can be done by a non-Kohen, can be done by a Yisrael. And the Mishnah says explicitly it can even be done by a woman. So the Rishonim asked Kasha on this Sefer, he tells a story that a woman can shech chulin. The Mishnah says women are allowed to shech kachim even. So how could there be such a statement? So we're not exactly sure what this means. So out of all the traditions or quasi-traditions or customs, whatever that this Elder Adoni collected, so this one became the most popular. And in fact, that's what the Ramal writes, that's what Amminig is that women don't shechita. We're not saying that's no good, we're not saying shechita nevela, we're not saying it's possible, but somehow the Amminig has become the women don't shechita. Probably in the world of Nigla, the reason why women don't shechita is by a very, very simple reason, is because the Gemara says that the Gideon Maseches Chulin, that whenever you shechita, so you have to be very, very careful, not only does the shechita not have to know, he has to know all the halachos of shechita. He has to be someone who doesn't get queasy when he sees blood. The Gemara says that if it's someone who faints when they see blood, so that's not a good job for the shechita. So again, this is not a discriminatory statement, just that sometimes some women, not all women, some women are better with blood than others, but some women get a little bit harder for them to take this giant ox and to shech the ox and watch the blood come all over the place. So maybe it's not the best idea that women should be shechting. So the minig is that women don't shech, but to say that shechitas and avela as a masur back to Moshe Rabbeinu is very, very hard to believe. The Rav had a famous view, and the Rav said that maybe the reason why women don't shech is because the olden days, shechit was like a position of authority in the community. There was the rabbi, there was the dayan, there was the shechit. It was like, when you had like the shul stationery from the shtetl, so the shechit was up there. That was a position of sarong, position of authority. So generally speaking, we don't give women positions such as that which command that kind of authority. That's a potential shalom in terms of sororo. So maybe that was the reason why women had the practice in Europe not to shech. Whatever it is, Lamai said as a minhag women don't shech. To say that's part of Halacha Moshe Messina back to Moshe Rabbeinu, it was a little bit of a stretch. The Nevi Yehuda has a tshuva where he quotes one of these practices that are referred to by the Rishonim as a minhagim el hadoni, and then Rabbi Yehuda gives a whole shtick of Torah to try to explain why it's maybe right in Halacha. And in the end, he writes that after he writes the old shuvah, he writes, I don't even know why I write this shuvah, he writes. He says, why are we writing shuvah tarahs to defend this practice? It's such a bizarre collection of statements. We have no idea where they came from. We have no idea what they're based on. We have no idea they're really authentic. So some of them make sense. The Rishon looked at some of them and said, some of them are not bad. Some of them, we could explain up the Allah. And some of them were just some chumras bi'aman, rabba bi'aman. It's just customs that developed in different places based on somebody collected them and called them hilchos of Yoshua. So the Rebbe writes that, like, we don't have to spend too much time on them. So we spent already 5 minutes on them. I'm not going to spend too much time on them. Anyway, but the most famous of all of them is the first Eisen Chul, that women don't shech based on the Hilchas Al-Fiyah, whatever that's based on. Okay. When we speak about the mitzvah of Shechita, so the halachas of Shechita are very, very much connected in terms of the Hilchas Kashrus to another halacha that governs the Hilchas Kashrus. It's not too relevant for us, and we'll see, maybe a little bit relevant for us. Those are the halachas of Eivah min Hachai. The Torah says explicitly in a few places that we're not permitted to socha nefshi v'bosar, v'chazak v'cholta, etc. The Torah speaks about not eating the nefshi and the bosar. So what in the world does that mean, the nefshi and the bosar? So the Torah Shema Peh explains that refers to the issue of eating Eivah min Hachai. So when an animal is alive and you cut a limb off that animal, even though the animal may subsequently be shechted, subsequently die, that's still considered to be Eivah min Hachai. Any Eivah that was taken off the animal b'chayav is also an authority. It is so awesome to eat that it's also even for goyim to eat. This is one of the Sheva mitzvahs in Noach, based on Sukkim back in Parshas Noach. Whether the halachas of Eivah min Hachai for Jews and goyim are identical, that's, we'll talk a little bit about that now. That's already a loaded sugyas. But there is definitely an issur in the Torah, both for Jews and non-Jews, to partake of Eivah min Hachai. Then the Gemara adds on that not only is Eivah min Hachai asur, Bosa min Hachai is asur as well. That an Eivah has a very, very specific meaning in halach. Eivah means literally a limb. And in order to be a limb, it has to have bones and sinews and meat. There's a whole finger, a whole leg, a whole arm, something like that. In order to be an Eivah min Hachai, if you just take a little bit of meat off of the animal while still alive, that wouldn't be an Eivah min Hachai, that would still be also min Hatorah because of Bosa min Hachai. So again, these are two related, not necessarily identical, but these are all things which are Dvar Ma'asur min Hachai. The question is, any of this have any relevance b'chlal for who in the world, and we hope in today's civilized world, is walking around chopping off limbs, off of animals and eating them. So does any of this have any ramifications for us, the halacha? So the Gemara has a few potential applications of Eivah min Hachai in very, very lomdish ways. These are, you wouldn't in a million years have thought this is even in the sugya of Eivah min Hachai, but the Gemara has some possible suggestions of some very strange applications of Eivah min Hachai. So one of the applications is the famous Gemara in the beginning of Maseches Becharos, where the Gemara raises the question about the drinking of milk. And I'm not talking about Chavis Rari, I'm talking about regular plan. Anyone finish your coffee now before we say that it's strafe. So all together with your donuts, that was last week's issue. So what's the status of drinking milk? Regular milk from a regular kosher animal. What in the world could possibly be wrong with milk? So the Gemara has a halakha that all milk is strafe. What's wrong with milk? So the Gemara has two different opinions as to why the halakha gets only halakha. It's going to be deflected in a moment, but what was the havamina that all milk in the world is trey? So for one of two reasons. So one reason the Gemara suggests is maybe it's included in the Isser of Dam, that milk was considered to be halachically like a byproduct of blood, milk, the worlds have to do with each other. So the Gemara has a whole machlekes atanoi in the beginning of Maseches Nida about the relationship, whether you want to say this is a biological question, a spiritual question, a halachic question, whatever the nature of this question is that there's some kind of a correlation between blood and milk. The Gemara makes an observation The Gemara says that we know that, generally speaking, when a woman is nursing, so she's usually not getting her period, not 100%, but usually there's some kind of a correlation between those two statements. So there's something in the world of biology / halacha / spiritual universe, somewhere between dam and milk. And therefore, the Gemara quotes one Tana that says, dam neko v'nase cholav, that the blood somehow stops and turns halachically into milk. So when a person is drinking milk, that's an extension of the dam of the animal. So that's the case, and we could raise a question about, is all milk considered to be treif? Maybe all milk is halachically considered to be dam. So Gemara is not so sure that we even accept this view. This view of dam nekav nasa cholav may not even be accepted la halacha, but the Gemara throws it out as one possibility that it would be problematic. Derech agav, this is the Chazon Ish's raya, that in all areas of halacha, dam doesn't have to be red. The Mishnah tells us in Maseches Nida that dam that's not red is not halachically considered to be dam. That's only a quirk in Uchaz Nida, says the Chazon Ish. That's a special halacha Moshe Sinai of Damel, that there are certain maras dam that were told to Moshe Rabbeinu. But in other areas of halacha, like for kashrus and other areas, so then dam need not necessarily be red. Even white, if you hold that milk is considered to be blood, so then it's considered to be blood, that would say in the fact that it doesn't have the red color to it. So there are some potential important opinions from the Chazon Ish. That's an observation the Chazon Ish makes in the Maseches Bechoros. But the more popular reason why the Gemara says that all milk should potentially be treif is nothing to do with dam, it has to do with eva menachai. That an animal, behev b'chayah, when an animal is alive, you're not allowed to eat it. So if you're not allowed to eat it, any milk that comes out of the animal is coming out of a non-kosher item. And there's a general rule that whatever comes out of something non-kosher is not kosher. It's actually for this reason why the halacha b'aisa, you're not allowed to drink milk from a non-kosher animal. So if you have a chazer milk, you have pig's milk, you have camel's milk, you have non-kosher animal's milk, so that milk is treif mid da'araisa, that's called davar yotze min ha'asar. That is the reason, because of that halacha, that milk that comes from a non-kosher animal is considered to be non-kosher. That is the source for the Mishnah in Maseches Avodah Zarah. You have to be very, very careful when you buy milk. How do you know that there's no non-kosher milk mixed in? So just because somebody tells you that it's cow's milk, how do you know? Maybe it's horse's milk, maybe it's camel's milk, maybe it's chazan milk. How do you know? So the Gemara explains that you're able to tell. If you look, if you ever see camel's milk, you ever look at the cow milk, so it looks different. The Gemara says the consistency is different. So it's obvious one or the other. But the Gemara says, but you never know if somebody mixed in a little bit. Means if it's basically cow's milk, just a little bit of a chazim, a little bit of pink, but a little camel's milk was mixed in, so then it's going to be hard to tell. If it's mamash one cup versus another cup, so it looks different. One's thicker, one's there, one has a certain protein, so it doesn't have whatever it is, you can tell it looks different. But if it's basically a whole cup of cow's milk, just a little bit of chaza mixed in, so that's not going to be so discernible. So that's what the Gemara says, because I were afraid that in the olden days, a person goes to eat a cup of milk, trying to have his cup of coffee, can't find the milk. So he goes to across the street to his Goyish neighbor, and he asks him, can you get a little goat to your barn and bring me a cup of milk? So the Nan said, no problem. For $1, give me a cup of milk, no problem. So the Goy goes to go milk his cow, and he milks, and the cow only produces 3/4 of a cup. So the Goy gets all nervous. Hey, the guy wants a whole cup of coffee, a whole cup of milk. So he goes to his pig, and he goes, fills it up a little bit, then she knows what I'm telling the difference. So he must ask, you won't be able to tell the difference. If it's mostly cow's milk, a little bit of chaz milk, you won't be able to tell the difference. So therefore, Chazal were afraid. Anytime the Goy tells you that it's cow's milk, how do you know? Maybe mixed in some chaz milk. So therefore, Chazal instituted that you have to have what's called Yisroel Ro'eyum. You have to have a Jew watching the milking process. Otherwise, the Goy is not going to be believed. You have to have a firm Jew watching to make sure that the milk has not been tampered with. So the Shach points out that that's not really a concern in the Torah. Because Minat Torah, even if the Goy put in a little bit of milk, it's going to be Batal Merov anyway. Minat Torah, if things have the same taste, so it's Min Bimino, so it's going to be Batal Merov anyway. So again, we're not afraid the Goy gives you a whole cup of chaz milk, that you'll tell about you right away. We're just afraid of a little minuscule amount in, it's going to be Batal anyway. And then the Shach says the odds that this happened anyway are so unlikely. How often is this going to happen? The guy's got a big cow, and the cow somehow runs out of milk in the middle of the milking, he's going to go run to get the chai. Very unlikely. And therefore, Minat Torah, you wouldn't really have to be concerned with this. The overwhelming odds are that when you go to a goy and he gives you a cup of milk, so mid-arais, you can assume the milk is kosher. Nevertheless, with the Rambam and Chazal were afraid that since every once in a while you could mess up, so therefore Chazal instituted across the board called the Takana that you have to have Yisrael Ra'eyu. So this is the source of a major controversy that's still raging at Hayim as well. What exactly does that mean? Yisroel Ra'eyu, how do you define exactly that you're watching the milking process? So there are many poskim who defined it, kipshuto, literally. Chazal Masachay, that's the way you have to have a Jew watching the milk coming out of the cow, anything short of that. So the milk is treif, mid rabbanan. And Rabbi Moshe Feinstein said that it doesn't have to be literally ro'eil, as long as you know for a fact that it's coming from a cow. So we have a principle in other areas of halacha called ABC, Yodiyah B'lo Re'iyah. If we know for certain that something is true, even if I didn't see it with my own two eyes, that's also good enough. So Rabbi Moshe says he thinks when you have a system in place of government control, there's a very, very strict government control of the milk supply in America. So he says that I can say with absolute certainty, I know when I go to the store to buy a container of milk, I know that it's cow's milk. There's no way in the world that's pig's milk. Nobody's allowed. It's against the law to dilute the milk with anything, and it's going to be caught. You're going to be caught with the dairy industry is very, very well regulated. It's going to be caught a billion times over before anyone starts to tamper with the milk supply. And therefore, Moshe says, I can say with absolute certainty, not having been out of wildest dreams, that any cup of milk that I get in America is anything but actual cows. Nobody's putting horses and camels and cow's milk in. That the FDA is watching over. Remember a couple of years ago when the FDA was on strike, nothing more. The contract or something. So for a couple of weeks, nobody was working for the FDA. So somebody asked me a question. They said, "No, maybe all milk was trade now. Nobody's watching." Okay, nobody's watching, but Lamaisa, this is not the opportunity the farmers have been waiting for. All of a sudden, now the government's sleeping, we're going to put in all the chasim. That's not happening. So anyway, so that was the famous Pesach of Rav Moshe. So many, many people in America and other civilized countries rely on Rav Moshe's kula, and some don't. So they're HVH. So in the Hasidic world, so they did not accept the school of Rav Moshe. Other communities didn't accept the school of Rav Moshe. But many, many, including our own communities, did accept the school of Rav Moshe, and they assumed that it's permissible even to drink the regular government milk. This is only true if you live in a place where it's actually government supervision. If you're in some place in some crazy country that things are not watched so well, so that would be a problem. So if you're going traveling anywhere, you're going to a normal place, so then you don't have to worry. If you find yourself for some strange reason going to some country that's in the middle of having a revolution or something, so I mean Ukraine, some place that's in the middle of between the third and fourth world country, so then you should try to. There's a fourth world country, but somewhere like that, so you should try to just find out beforehand whether. Hashkoch organizations in America would accept milk from such places, whether that's considered to be enough of a standard. I remember I was once we got stuck in Italy for a couple of hours when my daughter was a baby and we needed some milk for her. So I remember I was wondering about what the standards of milk were in Italy. So when I came back to America and I asked somebody, they looked around, it was pretty normal country, it's part of the EU. So I don't know what the latest of Suffolk was, so I think it's okay. But other kinds of countries that are not standardized of anything, so one has to raise a question whether the milk was really kosher. Anyway, back to that story. So there is a din called Yaitzim and Asur. So the Gemara has this din that maybe Yaitzim and Asur applies to all milk, because forget about milk coming out of a chazan, milk coming out of a cow should also be trafed, because the cow is an Eva Menachayim. The cow is trafed. Now I eat a cow. So that's the Gemara's kasha. So the Gemara spends about a daf trying to figure out why it's okay. So finally, the Gemara comes up with a very, very fascinating conclusion. It says, you know why it's okay? Eretz Zavas Chalav Udvash Ksiv. The Torah describes Eretz Yisrael as being the place, the land flowing with milk and honey. Can you imagine that would be such a terrible advertisement? It's flowing with milk and honey, but a little asterisk at the bottom, and all the milk was straight. You're not allowed to have the milk. So that wouldn't be the way the Torah would describe Eretz Zavas Chalav Udvash. I remember when I once noticed that the sign of the Ministry of Tourism in Eretz Yisrael. Anyone knows what it is? It's like the emblem of the Ministry of Tourism in Eretz Yisrael. There's two guys carrying a big bunch of grapes on a pole. That was the worst tour ever in the history of mankind. So it was still suffering. How did it happen? Who put that as the sign of the Ministry of Tourism? I can't understand. So Eretz Zavas Chalav Udvash. So the Torah says that it's called the Eretz Chalav. Oh, Chalav means the Chalav is butter. So, Baruch Hashem, we could read this, I believe, that milk was kosher. So there is a fascinating machlekes and rishonim as to what the significance of that is and a potential nafkamina ladina from that. So there is a din tucked away in Uchaz Bas B'chol. We didn't get anywhere near Bas B'chol yet. In Uchaz Bas B'chol, there's a din that there's a difference between the curds in the whey, the little samafet. And all milk is made up of two parts. It's got the curds, that's the part that turns into cheese, coagulates. And got the whey, is the liquidy part of the milk. So we have a cup of milk, so it's everything's all mixed in together. In the olden days, until 50 years ago, until they started to prepare the milk the way they do now, the homogenizing the milk, so you have a cup of milk, you have a bottle of milk, if you leave it for a day or two, it would start to separate. The curds would start to separate from the whey. Now, the way the milk is treated, it doesn't happen. But I mean, eventually, down the line, but it'll be long spoiled before that happens. But in the olden days, we just simply would separate into two different parts. So the Gemara says that technically speaking, with the araisa, the only part of the milk that's really milchix is only the curds part, not the cheese, only the solid part. The liquidy, watery part of the milk, but it separates from the milk, so that's not considered to technically be chol of midaraisa. Midarabanan, we treat it as chol, but midaraisa, it's basically just what it's a whitish little water or something. That's not the real milk. The real milk is the cheesy part. The Badir Shulchan has an observation, because Bas Mechala, when he writes, that if it's really true that the milky part is not, the watery part, the whey, is not considered to really to be milk with araisa, so why don't we find the following din? Because Bas Mechala, every time you have a little bit of milk falls into a pot of meat, you should say, Amid araisa, you only have to be Mishah Shishim, connected the cheesy part, not connected the watery part. So he says, the Teretz is that it only is considered to be Mechol, it only takes on the category of not being milchis once it's separated off. It's skimmed away, but it's moved away from the cheesy part. So then the halacha says it's just war, it's just mayabi alma. But calls back to all mechubayachad, it's a cup of milk. So that's going to be sitting there with a chemist and trying to figure out how much milk is cheese. That's ridiculous. But the bottom line is there is such a concept called mecholov. Mecholov in the Torah is not really considered to be milchis. So the Rosh and the Sechet Chulin quotes from one of the Rishon from Rabbeinu Eliezer, who says that he thinks that when you have mecholov, so you're right, it's not considered to be milchis. And you know what else it's not considered to be? It's not considered to be kosher either, he says, because it's not called cholov. So he says that really anything that comes out of an animal should have been treif. That's what the din is, yosbir asur asur. Elohat is a special quirk of exeris of kosov, that whatever is called cholov is mutter. Eretz Vaslav, it can't be milk and still be treif. It's impossible. Rosham wouldn't have advertised Eretz Yisrael as being a place to come and drink the treifus. So anything that's covered by the word in Chumash, chalav, everything that's chalav, api alocha, is considered to be kosher. Says Rabbi Eliezer, but the whey is not considered to be chalav. Harai, it's not chalav because it's not a bas b'chalav issue. It's not a bas b'chalav issue, so it's not called chalav. It's not called chalav. It was never mutter. If it's not mutter, then it's also in the Torah because it's also in Asr. So I don't want you to check your ingredients on your Dunkin' Donuts, but I suspect there may have been some whey in there. So according to Rabbi Eliezer, all whey is treif midaraisa, because it's not considered to be chol. So the halacha we don't pass like this. The Rosh says, "Why I never heard that whey is bach." The Gemara talks about eating mechol. So the Rosh explains that whey mechol is not called chol. The nuch is both for chol purposes. It's got to be. Any the way it was yotzef in the animal, it's like do the shame. Of course, it's called cholim. It's not called cholim. It came from milk. It's part of the milk. Might have kamina with its cheese, with a little mismuffin, with a tuffet, with a ways, with a curds. It's all the same thing. It's all considered to be cholim, and therefore it's all covered by the same heter. It does make a difference. That's a we paskin alocha, not like this rabbi. Yes, we paskin that milk is kosher as long as it came from a kosher animal. And whey is kosher, curds of everything is kosher, as long as, again, it came from a kosher animal. The fact that it came from an Eved Menachai, that doesn't really concern us.
Why is tamar's milk?
Is that true? Oh, very good. Excellent. So the Gemara actually raises the question about the status of mother's milk. And the Gemara tells us that mother's milk is basically okay. There's a gezeira derabbanan that you're not supposed to be yonic directly from a woman, but if you take mother's milk and put it into a cup and drink it, that would be kosher. So you mechav into the Ramban's cash against the Rambam. So the Rambam writes, Ruchus Machos Asuros, that Besar Adam is Asur. That you're not allowed, it's called Machos Asuros. If you take human flesh, that's an Issad Derais Machos Asuros. Which lav is it? So the Rambam writes, it's no lav. It doesn't say in the Chumash, don't eat human flesh. But it does say, Osato Chelu. It says you're allowed to eat the following animals. So the Rambam claims, based on the Teres Kohanim, that it's an Issad Asay to eat human flesh. It's not a lab in a chemal, but it's an isarase, but it's still awesome in the raisa. So the Ramban asks in the Rambam, that would be true that Basar Odom is part of Machalos Asuros, so then the milk should be Yaitzim in Ha'asur. So, and we know for a fact that's not true. The Gemara says, Ksubis Beferish, that human milk is basically kosher. So why is that phenomenon not true? So the Ramban says, you see, for me, the Rambam is not right. So the answer to the Rambam is probably based on the fact that the isar of Basar Odom is not on the same level as eating chaser. It's an isaresin, not an isaraf, and maybe that doesn't carry with it. Yeah, that's already a whole loaded discussion as to what the Bir Adav and the Rambam is. We're 100% right. That Gemara and Ksubas is pivotal for this discussion. The Ramban also agrees that you can't eat people. The Ramban even besides you not like kill people, but besides that you're not eat people, the Ramban agrees as an Isra Hanam and Ameis, so of course it's also Midaraisa. Now I'll be a cannibal Midaraisa. Be'en if you're Ramban, be'en if you're Ramban, it's just not exactly sure which Isra it is. But so that's, nobody should take this shir out of context. Okay, whoever's listening away at Torah, just don't tell me what we just said. Okay, good. Back to our story. So the Gemara had this very, very strange Havamina, but Lamaisa disappeared. At the end of the day, it doesn't really mean anything, that the milk is not a problem, and there really is no such thing in terms of the Yotzman also, or at least affecting milk. Is there anything else left, any other possibilities left concerning Yotze? So there is a question that the Rishonim raise about eggs. Maybe eggs have the same problem. It's also like a yaitzim in a asar. So there's probably some answer to that question also. So Taisus and Abisham, so I forget what the answer to that question is. So the bottom line is there's an answer to all these questions. That none of the things that we know to be kosher really truly carry with them in Isser v'yaitzim in asar. Is there anything? Is there any Eiv Menachayim left b'chal for us? So the Gemara discusses the following shaila. The Gemara says that if you have an animal that's still alive and you cut off meat off of it, even though the animal subsequently dies, anything that was removed when it was alive is a problem. Anything that was removed after it was dead, obviously, is not a problem. Where do you draw the line with the moment of death? We spoke about this in other contexts. In terms of animals, at what point do we say the animal is considered to be dead? So you can have a very, very strange thing. You can have, there is a famous phrase about the chicken jumping around, chicken without a head. So what would the din be if you shecht an animal and the head's still connected, just at the simar makom? So you cut through the corn, you cut through the veshet. Is the animal technically dead yet? So one could argue that not. It's not really halachically dead yet, just because it was a shechted. And that would raise a whole serious question. If I shecht an animal, I cut through both simanim, and the animal's still jumping around, which nice it will be. It's still moving around, the nerves are still moving, and a person would take off a piece of meat off the animal at that point, would that be called eva menachai? So the chora, the answer is yes. That if halachically it's not yet considered to be technically dead, so that any meat that was cut off before it was dead would l'chora be a problem of Eivim Menachayim. So the Gemara says, no, that's not true. Why is it not true? Because b'shchita tol rachamano. Because the Torah gave us a mitzvah shchita. V'achta tashet tzvisicha, alocha v'ashim sinu, yekatu simonim. So basically what the Torah has told us is that we're almost like redefining what the status of death is vis-a-vis animals. Based on the regular biology, the regular halachas, whatever you think death means, whatever you define the moment of death and what you thought the world would be. But in terms of a shechita, so once you shecht it, the game's over. That's it. It's impossible to have a kosher shechita and then turn around and say, oh, by the way, it's still lost mishum eifim benachai. So shechita, the Gemara is almost learning along this, that shechita is almost like the tikkun. Shechita is the antithesis of the eifim benachai. It's lo yitochein to have that shechita happened already, and then we still turn around and call it eifim benachai. Even though we don't call it eifim benachai, you're not allowed to eat it whole man that the animal hasn't yet physically, biologically died yet. So if you shecht an animal, you take off a piece of meat, so eating it is not called Eivim Menachai, but it's still also to eat. Why is it also to eat? So the Gemara quotes a pasuk that says, L'sochol Adam, that whole man that the animal's still jumping around, so you have to wait. So it's a big machlekes, have we shown him, is that a din d'raisa, is that a din d'rabbanan, is it really also the chum d'rabbanan? But in terms of Eivim Menachai, for sure it's not. So comes the Gemara in Maseches Chulin and raises the following question. That once you say that there's no more problem of Eivim Menachai only because of Shechita, means it really should have been. The Olam, based on the regular rules, it should have really truly been Eivim Menachai. Comes the Parsha of Shechita and says, no, that changes everything. Shechita overrides the whole Parsha, the whole Sugya of Eivim Menachai. So comes the Gemara and raises the following question. What about Lagavi Agoi? So Lagavi Agoi, Goy doesn't have the Parsha of Shechita. That Chiddush HaTorah Shechita was only given to Jews, was not given to Goyim. So if the Parsha of Shechita was only given to Jews, then the Heter of Eivim Menachai in this matter was also only given to Jews. So you could have a very, very bizarre situation where you have an animal that's technically alive, but it's already Shechut. So vis-a-vis Jews, it cannot possibly be included in the Isser of Eivim Menachai. But vis-a-vis Goyim, it can be. So the Gemara says, really? It's a bizarre scenario. You have, it's harder to be a goy than to be a Jew. You have to be from, you have to have a higher standard of kashrus to be a goy than to be a Jew. So the Gemara says, that's ridiculous. The Gemara says, we spoke about this in the Tuesday night room. Mika Midei, the assumption of Torah mitzvahs is that we got more mitzvahs when we became Jewish, not less mitzvahs. So the Gemara says that if it's kosher for a Jew, then it's kosher for a goy. You can't say otherwise. So once it's considered to be kosher for a Jew, then the game's over. Then it's by definition going to be kosher for a goy as well. So the goyim can also breathe a sigh of relief that once the meat was shechted, so then all of a sudden we turn around and we say, okay, no problem. So once it's kosher for a Jew, then it's kosher for a goy. So the Gemara then goes one step further and begins to discuss a very, very strange situation of Eivim Menachai, potential Shai of Eivim Menachai, both for Jews and then by extension for goyim. The Gemara has the following fascinating shaila. Gemara says when you start to shecht, so let's say for argument's sake you shecht the veshet first. If you do it now, let's say you shecht the vesh, you shecht the esophagus first. So the minute that you shecht through the esophagus, shechita hasn't really completed yet. On a bird maybe it has, but not on an animal requires two simon midaraisa. So I shecht through the veshet, but the shechita has not yet happened. If you think about it, anything that's connected to the veshet is gone, has been removed from the animal. That once that cut is made, so then the entire digestive tract of the animal is not really connected anymore. If there's no esophagus, so then anything that's connected to the esophagus is also commander, you want to use it for commander munich bedikla dummy. It's like you like pulled it out, yanked it out, and put it into a basket. So it's not connected anymore. So wait a second, hold the phone. How in the world could you ever eat any part of the digestive system of the animal? That includes such yummy parts as the kishkin, the old kishkin, not the parpa kishkin, something great. I mean, the real kishkin. Anything that's part of the, anything connected to the extension of the esophagus, any part of the digestive system, is automatically considered to be Eivim Menachai. Or if you do the other way around, if you cut the conner first, so then anything connected to the conner, which could be the lungs, any other parts, so all of a sudden, any part that's connected to the simen that you shechted is Eivir, or Bosar, bin Hachai, because it was removed, not literally physically yanked out of the animal, but Lamaisa, it was removed, the source of connection, physical source of connection, from the rest of the animal, and that should be called an Eivim Menachai. And that occurred before Shechita, Anu Chumra. All kishkis, everything is trash. Everything is Eivim Menachai. So the Gemara says that's ridiculous. The Gemara says why? Shechita Marachamana. The Torah said to shech. The Rabban Shalom knew when you shech, you're going to shech one sim before the other sim. That's the way the Derech Olam. So obviously, look in the parasha of Shechita, the sugya of Shechita is the understanding that you're going to do it in this way. And since it's understood you do it this way, whatever happens there, Shechita is good to go. Nothing to worry about. You can't throw me a curveball and say, it's Eivim Menachai. If I shecht it, I shecht it. Because again, the same as we said before, the assumption of Chazal is, the Tashafah is assuming, Shechita is the antidote to Eivim Menachai. As long as I followed the rules of the Shechita, you can't slap me with this Eivim Menachai. So comes the Gemara and says, wait, not so simple. That's true vis-a-vis Jews. But not vis-a-vis Goyim, the same question we asked before, that when it comes to Goyim, so then Goyim don't have the Parsha Shechita. So they don't have the Parsha Shechita. They don't have that antidote to Eichem Menachai. So no, the same answer we said before, Mika Midi. Whatever is good for us is good for them. So that's the background of this discussion. Come to Rishayim and say, wait a second. Well, Pashut. What if it's not Mutter for the Jews? We just said it is Mutter for the Jews. What if I didn't really go a good Shechita? I tried to shecht the animal, and I goofed, and I turned it into a nevela from last time. So now it's a nevela. So I can't say, well, it's kosher for me, therefore it's kosher. It's not kosher for me. Once it's no longer kosher for me, that special heter that the goy is hanging on with dear life to cheshchit also. As long as it was kosher for the Jew, now it's kosher for the goy. But it's not kosher for the Jew because it was a nevela. So guess what? Now we should say, for the goy, I can't say it's also shum nevela, goy, we're allowed to eat nevela, it's also shum nevela. Mamish from left field, mamish out of nowhere, we should have the following problem. If I shecht an animal and goof up and mess up, and now I have an avail in front of me, what do I want to do? I want to give it to the goyim. I want to make a few dollars off of it. Wait a second, you can't give it to the goyim now. You have to first take out all the kishkis, take out all the intestines, take everything out, take the stomach out, take the whole digestive system out, because you're giving it to the goyim, being mashal the goy in azat isad yarais vei menachai. The goy can't figure this out. The Jew can't figure this out. No one can figure this out. This is Eivim Menachai. You got to learn a whole daf of a seventh school to figure out what this is Eivim Menachai. So the Rishonim, while looking at this, so you say, huh? We do this all the time. Everybody does this. I mean, all the slaughterhouses, something turns out to be a nevela. When we had that nevela in Kip Marsha a few years ago, 20, 30 years ago, so what do you think? We took out the kishkas, we gave the whole sheep over to the goy and walked away with them. We're being mashal the goy in the isser of eating Eivim Menachai. So a load of questions. So the place can discuss the shayla. This was common practice in Europe. Allah das, I would have heard it's such a wild thing to start taking out the kishkas before you give the animal to the goy. So the Chassam Sofer has a whole discussion about this. So he has a fascinating discussion. Chassam Sofer writes that maybe the reason why we're very mekel on the Shail is that, what do you mean it's an Avela? Come on, who are you kidding? It's an Avela. So you have a train shofet. What went wrong? He probably missed a little this, a little that. To say it's Vade and Avela with so many things, and then, you know, it's so unlikely that it was Babish and Avela. It became a trefa. So we have so many chumras and hagim and yuchas trefas and shchit and everything that are above and beyond the call of duty. So we have chumras. We don't rely on this. We don't rely on that. The goyim, they're not so. They can rely on. Vis-a-vis the goy. The goy can assume that it's by a kosher shchita. So Chassam Sofer has a whole discussion about that. Why the minhag in Europe was so lahokal that we would just hand off these animals to the goyim and nobody ain't paitzah pabitzavtif. Nobody questioned the Evmanachai part of the sugya. So again, so you have this fascinating idea. You have this issue of Evmanachai out there that, in theory, speaks to us. Practically, it's not relevant for us. Even the longest of potential applications, whether it's about the milk, or taking the piece of the meat off after shechita before it dies, or shilas of pulling out the intestines, all these wild, crazy longest applications of Ibn Achai, to us, basically don't apply, because shechita usually saves the day. But all of a sudden, you have this back question of, wait a second, what about the goyim? So we have, this year was more for goyim than for Jews. So put it on the, everyone should hear it. Whoever wants to keep the dinner of Ibn Achai has got to be aware. The Gemara says that the goyim are supposed to learn all the sugyas of Shem Etzim Bnei Noach. So this is a good law of the Shashia. They should listen. They should try to understand what's considered to be Ibn Achai, what's not considered to be Ibn Achai. Okay. Hopefully, Shem, next week, this is not a continuing with maybe moving to the realm of a little bit of Chos Trefas out of the Gemara.